What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and two special guests today, Ryan Whitledge and regular on the show, Jack Manuel. What's up, fellas? How we doing?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah, you got my name right.
What's going on, boys? Got a full house today. Should be a fun show.
Continue our NBA Outlet preview series, and today we're talking Portland Trail Blazers. As always, if you want to check out the previous shows, head to iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But before we talk about the Blazers for next season, we're going to talk about last season. 53 wins, third in the Western Conference, all the way to the Western Conference Finals, but swept by Golden State. How would you summarize last season in one emoji?
It'd probably be the big shit-eating grin from ear to ear, because I don't think anyone out here was expecting them to make it that far.
Yeah, I'm going with the wave emoji, just because it almost summed up the biggest and most positive moment from the season. Though I did have zipper mouth emoji in a similar sort of vein to Ryan, and then I had the exploding head emoji as well, because I thought that they shocked some people too.
So I went with, like, the princess emoji, like the Cinderella, because this was like a Cinderella. It's like a Cinderella story. Once again, the Blazers weren't supposed to go deep into the playoffs. They weren't necessarily supposed to get past the Oklahoma City Thunder. We had the Dame wave. We had Enes Kanter playing with a separated shoulder. We had them repeatedly having these gritty out performances. CJ McCollum had his game winner over Denver. The Cinderella type of season. It was probably the best this roster can get to, but they reached the highest stage.
I went with something pretty basic here. Dollar bill for Dame Dollar. Obviously, Dame hit a huge shot in the playoffs, and you'd think Blazers and all the success they had last year, that's a guy you always look to. But biggest positive takeaway from last season?
I'm going to have to go with getting that playoff experience because, I mean, it's been a team that had been mired in, first and second round exits. And so finally kind of getting that taste of success. And you heard it in Dame's media day interviews when he's saying, now we have to have championship aspirations. We can't just have the aspirations to make it back to the Western Conference or make it to the playoffs. So we got to continue to build on those next steps. So biggest takeaway from last season was gaining that deep playoff run experience and figuring out what it takes to actually make that far of a run. Because we saw him getting gassed in that Western Conference Finals. No one had energy for that series.
Yeah, I think that Ryan's on the money there, but I'll just go with just the single moment. I think that Dame Dagger, it's one of the best moments I've ever watched as a basketball fan. Obviously, wasn't around for the Jordan days and such, but as a playoff moment, it's one of the best that I've ever seen.
I think the biggest positive takeaway is that you had, you found out that at least Rodney Hood, I'm just going to go in a different direction so we don't say the same thing. Rodney Hood looked like he can actually be a rotational player again. Obviously, the regular season was an up-and-down stretch for him, and we got into the playoffs, and Rodney Hood played some major big-time minutes, especially in the overtime game against Denver in particular, where he had, 16 points between, the last 5 minutes in overtime. So having certain guys step up was promising because we always know that Lillard and McCollum are the driving force for the offense, and if Portland wants to go farther, other guys have to step up and contribute.
I went with the same one as kind of Ryan and Jack. Obviously the playoff experience, just taking that next step as a team. And then like Jack mentioned, you think about last year's postseason, like I pointed to the emoji, that shot against OKC, Paul George was upset calling it lucky. So I think that was huge. But
It's a bad shot, guys. It's a bad shot.
Bad shot, of course.
That we'll all remember. Biggest negative takeaway from last season?
It has to be Nurk's injury because that just puts such a giant shadow over everything this season. I mean, we got Hassan Whiteside to fill the gap, but then it's now, what do you do when Nurk comes back? What's his timeline? What's the role going to be? And then also what the team could have done with a healthy Nurkic. So hands down, the Nurk injury.
I'll pose one to you in a hypothetical world, Ryan. With Nurkic healthy, do you reckon the Blazers could have stolen a couple of games from the Warriors?
I think that that probably could have at least pushed it to a six-game series. I still think the Warriors are coming out of that. But Nurk's passing acumen was just on another level last year. Stotts has the ability to get big men to learn how to pass the ball. And I think just that kind of increased ball movement plus that inside presence that he posed, especially against a smaller Warriors lineup, could have at least pushed it another two games.
Yeah, I think for me, that's what the negative takeaway was, the fact that, you know, they couldn't take a game at all from the Warriors, despite the fact that they had a lead of 17 points or more in three straight playoff games, apparently, according to stats. They were the first team in 20 years to have such a lead and lose all three of those games. So they started well. It's just that they couldn't close it out. And I think, like Ryan was mentioning, I think Nurkic certainly could have helped that, even though Kanter was gargantuan across the entire playoff series.
Yeah, for me, it's Nurkic as well. The fact that you lost him at the point last season where now it doesn't – not only did he miss the playoffs last year, but he's going to miss time this year as well. So him getting hurt was the biggest negative.
Yeah, I agree with Corey. Not only last year being out for the playoffs, but going to this season, not having him, because he's on a really good contract, and now you have to bring in Hassan Whiteside with that money. Not saying the Blazers would have signed a big-time free agent, but there would have been a little bit more flexibility possibly there. So that just really hurts the franchise. You don't get rewarded for making a good move front office-wise. But talking ranking via our OTG staff, the Blazers are coming in at number 8. Do you guys think this is too high, too low, or fair?
I'm a little biased. I'm going to say it's a little bit too low, but it's not far. I'd probably put them somewhere 6 or 7. So that's just me, but I understand where they can be end up coming in at 8. There's just because the amount of question marks that are going in about all the roster changes this year. So.
Yeah, I think those question marks will probably have me. They could be as low as, say, an 11, but they could, like sort of Ryan said as well, have a ceiling as high as 6 or 7 because we know how good this team can be in the regular season, especially under the guise and leadership of Damian Lillard. So for me, it's pretty sort of accurate, but there is such a glut in that Western Conference sort of slog. But there are some teams, maybe one or two teams under them, the Warriors, the Celtics, maybe the Pacers or Nets, Raptors, that they could be lower than. But I think that this team is just so well coached by Stotts and has such a good regular season. And Hassan Whiteside should, you know, assimilate nicely. I think 8 is pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I think 8 is fair and reasonable. And if anything, I think it may be they might be going in the opposite direction, more towards 10. I don't see them going too far up on this list in my point of view. This is definitely still a very good team.
Yeah, I would go along the same lines as you, Corey. I think going into the season at number 8 is probably fair, but they have the potential to drop. One thing they have on their side is, you know, the main components of the team, Dame and CJ, didn't change, where a lot of teams are trying to bring in new stars. Now, moving on to the offseason draft-wise, Nasir Little at number 25. What'd you guys think about this pick?
Absolutely shocked and surprised Nasir Little was still sitting there at 25. I guess I can understand it just because, I mean, he didn't have that big of a role in his time in college. I'm okay with it. It's a developmental player. If he can give you anything on the offensive end this coming year, that's going to be, if he even cracks the rotation or sees the floor, that'll be a positive. But right now, if he can hold his own on defense for the limited minutes he'll see in games, that'll be a good sign. That's something for him to hang his hat on and kind of build his brand and reputation with.
Yeah, I think the defensive potential, as Ryan was alluding to, is something that is most exciting for Blazers fans and NBA fans alike. He's got such tremendous, you know, conventional athleticism. He's explosive. He's a great leaper. He's not necessarily massive and overly tall for a small forward, but it's an area where I think that the Blazers sort of lack a bit of depth. And if we see Nasir Little put up some numbers in the preseason, there's a spot in that rotation that he could almost crack. Obviously, you'd rather have, you know, Rodney Hood or Kent Bazemore and those sort of types. But I think Nasir Little is a pure sort of small forward in the sort of sense, whereas those guys are small shooting guards, posing as small forwards. So I think that there's some potential there. And I think that the Blazers were almost lucky to get this guy at such a low pick at 25. So I think they were lucky. And I think that it's going to pan out nicely for them, because I think that they like to develop guys well. There is a good system there in Portland. So I would expect to see hopefully some minutes from this year a little. And I think when you do see him, there's going to be some highlights aplenty.
Yeah, I mean, Little had some explosive moments for North Carolina last year. Definitely has some excitement. I don't see him playing a major role this year, but definitely got to keep your eye on.
I think anytime when you can grab a player who going into the college season was expected to probably be a lottery pick and you get him at 25, obviously you don't really expect a ton, but like you guys mentioned, you're going to develop him and see how it turns out. And I think that's all you ask for after a successful season. Now moving on to free agent additions and trades. They brought in Kent Bazemore, Hassan Whiteside, Pau Gasol, Anthony Tolliver, Mario Hezonja. What's your favorite move out of this bunch?
Probably my favorite move is, the Kent Bazemore. I had issues with Evan Turner. That's me putting it nicely. So Kent Bazemore adds more of what this team needs, and all the moves in general just kind of show you that the Blazers were kind of willing to give up defense in order to finally take that step to surround Dame and CJ, and we'll throw Nurk in here for when Nurk comes back, with shooters. Because the biggest thing in the last couple of playoffs has been that it's Dame and CJ and nobody else, because guys are inconsistent in their shooting. So we're giving up that edge on defense and making a push towards offense, which drops the Blazers down a lot in most people's books. And you can read that everywhere online. But I think the entire league is actually trending a little more towards offensive output over being a defensive stopper. So
I would agree with that as well. I think Kent Bazemore is probably the sexy sort of pick. He seems to fit well. You know, he showed plenty in Atlanta. And as a straight trade for Evan Turner, it makes so much sense. Even though Evan Turner, I think, had his moments as a sort of like floor general. But the one that intrigues me, I think, probably more so just as an asset acquisition, is Hassan Whiteside. And I've said this numerous times on the outlet and to Nick that I think that if you have Hassan Whiteside's contract, there is potential there to package for a guy like a Kevin Love if he's to show something at the midpoints of the season, you know, by the trade deadline. I think for me, I like it. I've been big on Kevin Love for a while. And I think that it's been made known by plenty of other sort of NBA sort of personalities. I think Channing Frye put it out there too. But Hassan Whiteside has such a good friendship and chemistry with CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard. He said he's going to be putting up triple doubles. I don't know what he's talking about. He averaged like 0.6 or 0.8 assists per game in his career. So that number's still going to have to rise just ever so slightly. But I think that they're going to get the most out of him, because I think Damian Lillard, I don't think there are many better leaders in this league than him. So I like the Hassan Whiteside deal, but at the same time, you know, I'd much rather be just letting Yusuf Nurkic be healthy, because then you don't have to acquire him necessarily in the first place.
Stotts does have the ability to get the best out of his big men as far as passing goes, though. If you go back and look at Plumlee's numbers and Nurk's numbers over these last couple of years, what they came in averaging and what they left averaging, exponential difference. So Hassan Whiteside could just assists. Also be... Hey, exponential. I'm standing by that statement.
So Ken Bazemore is the best acquisition they made. Obviously, I'm not a great big Evan Turner fan. I think that's somewhat known. You know, I think he's a great locker room guy. I think he's a good teammate, a good guy. But the fact of the matter is his lack of shooting, it just hurts. And obviously they were paying him $17 million and they weren't getting the kind of production that you really need from a guy in today's NBA getting paid $17 million to be your sixth man. Ken Bazemore gives you a little bit of everything, some defense, some passing, some rebounding, some shooting, some scoring. So you like that. A little bit undersized. Obviously they're going a little bit guard heavy, this Blazers team. And also I just want to say, I'm like sort of in still on Mario Hezonja. Like, I know it's not great at times, but there's some flashiness at times. Offensively, he can still get some buckets. And him being, I think, 24, 25, there's still some hope that he can develop into something.
Yeah, you guys nailed it. I think Bazemore is just a better complementary piece to Dame and CJ, where Evan Turner needed the ball in his hands to really have any success. Obviously, you want to see what happens with Whiteside. Started really good in Miami, and then things kind of went sour. And like you mentioned, Corey, Hezonja is an interesting piece. Showed some flashes last year with the Knicks. They let him play point guard a little bit. So there's some skills. It's just kind of him finding consistency, which has been his whole issue in the NBA. But talking departures, Evan Turner, Mo Harkless, Myers Leonard, Aminu, Seth Curry, Enes Kanter, and Jake Layman, which guy do you wish they could keep or could have kept?
Out of everyone, if I would have had my choice on that, it actually probably would have been Myers Leonard. And I really have no statistical backing for that. Past that, it's just he's been with Dame since the beginning. He's been part of that cohesive unit. He's, by all accounts, great locker room guy, great teammate. He was automatically the scapegoat for being Terry Stotts' whipping boy. So maybe now Stotts has to find somebody else. I don't know. It's just something about his character that just always drew me to him. I guess if we want to go for actual help in a game, probably Chief, but that's just because he drew the assignment for, you know, guarding the other team's best player all the time. So, but Myers Leonard is probably give me back the hammer. That's all I know.
He's a very handsome man. He's incredibly handsome. It makes me sick that there is a man that can play basketball and also be that good looking. I'm probably going to go with Al-Farouq Aminu. I think that the Blazers are going to, not necessarily rue, but the fact that there's a real lack of depth at the small forward and power forward position, and the fact that the Magic picked him up despite the fact that they have too many power forwards. It's weird that the league right now is almost like bereft of like one position. So you've got the Magic and the Knicks who have no small forwards or no shooting guards, but you've got the Blazers who have no small forwards and no power forwards. It'd be like amalgamated those teams. But yeah, I think the Al-Farouq Aminu for me, I think Jake Layman, sneaky, is going to be pretty good in Minnesota as well. And Mo Harkless, I don't understand why that Terry Stotts and Neil O'Shea gave him up with a first-round pick to the Los Angeles Clippers. It didn't make a lot of sense because I thought, despite the fact that he flamed out a little bit in the playoffs, I think that he's still a valuable piece. Any sort of wing rotation player has more value just given the position in today's league, 3-and-D sort of potential.
So Dan, you were saying Al-Farouq Aminu because I was kind of hoping I was going to be the only one to say him. But I think they missed something. That was a guy who's been there for the last 4 years. One of the grittier guys, kind of fits like the Ed Davis role, whereas those guys will do whatever they have to do for the team to win. Aminu playing power forward, small forward. You made a good point, Jack. This team really did, go away from their wings, losing Layman, losing Harkless. But I think Aminu, you missed the most for the fact that he also brings defense and shooting. And then I really like Layman. I watched one game last year, and this guy scored like 20 points in like 10 minutes. And I was like, who is this man who's like just hitting turnaround threes?
With beautiful hair, too.
Yeah, he does have good hair. He's got good hair.
This is a good-looking team. Good-looking team.
It's the colors.
Yeah, the black and red's nice. I like the black and red.
Yeah.
I think Aminu, you guys nailed it. Just that type of player in this NBA is so important. Somebody can guard the 3 and the 4 and even sometimes play him at the 5 going against a small lineup. So I think when you lose a guy like that and a veteran, and like Corey mentioned, a guy willing to kind of do the dirty work. But talking the Blazers team, what would be the biggest team X factor? And it can't be health or a specific player.
No health, no specific player. I think the Blazers have gone into each of the last numerous seasons touting their chemistry, touting their cohesiveness, touting that they've been a together group. And they lost 7 guys and got, I think if you want to count training camp invites or 2 ways, they brought in a grand total of 9 new guys. So this is going to be the ultimate test of Dame, CJ, and Stotts' leadership capabilities and how much they can bring basically a new locker room together. It's the first time Dame's undergone this much roster change since, LaMarcus Aldridge and Wesley Matthews left. So for me, the biggest X factor is going to be the leadership from your veterans and your coach and how they're able to bring this new team together and get them to be a cohesive and successful unit. Then again, that could also be for most of the teams in the Western Conference this year.
Oh, no doubt. But I think I'll piggyback a little bit off Ryan, and he sort of alluded to it earlier in terms of talking about Stotts. I think how he is going, what the on-court product of the Portland Trailblazers is going to be like next season with such a huge roster change. I think seven of the top players that in minutes were lost last season, you know, due to trades and due to free agency. So for me, what is the on-court product going to look like? I think, you know, Ryan alluded to earlier in terms of offense and defense, how different is it going to be? Obviously, you know, you add in Hassan Whiteside, what are you going to change about it? Is it, you know, do you stick to your guns? Do you change given the cattle at your disposal? Terry Stotts is an amazing coach, and I expect this Trailblazer team to be a contender out in the West no matter what, but I'm still intrigued to see what the actual results we see on the court is. Are there significant changes to the offensive and defensive schemes? It's intriguing.
So for me, it's as well camaraderie, chemistry.
That's the word.
Webster agrees.
right, yeah. So, I mean, obviously, all these new pieces, no Nurkic for a lot of the season. Obviously, your main two guys are Lillard and McCollum. You're happy to have those two guys to lead these younger guys forward and these new pieces in. But the fact of the matter is, whenever there's this much roster change, especially for a team that just got out of the Western Conference Finals, there's going to be some growing pains, quite frankly. That's how this goes, how this transitions. And then once Nurkic comes back, how does Whiteside and Nurkic coexist? Does Whiteside start coming off the bench again? Is he okay with coming off the bench? So I think chemistry and maybe even ego to a lesser extent with guys like Whiteside.
Yeah, I'm going to go with just a relief for Dame and CJ. Ryan hinted at this earlier. Deep in the playoff run, you can kind of see these guys were fatigued. So getting them some rest during the regular season, that doesn't mean actual rest or taking games off, but just guys taking some of the workload offensively. And as we mentioned with the offseason acquisitions, they're bringing in a little bit more offense, so maybe these guys can get a little bit of a break this season if they do go on another deep playoff run. And you guys have brought up Nurkic a lot. Ryan, when do you think he'll be back, and will he even be back this season? Because he, you know, suffered that injury pretty late in the year.
Stotts is trying to play this a little coy of that he's not necessarily, or not Stotts, Olshay is trying to play this a little coy in that he's not trying to necessarily constantly give updates about Nurk. He'll put him out there when they're there. Realistically, I'm going to stick with his previous timeline he gave of about February, maybe post All-Star break. I want to say that the Blazers go on a three-game road trip right after the All-Star break. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see him maybe travel with the team just to kind of get those sea legs under him of going on a road trip, getting the grind, and then maybe get integrated back in. I don't see him getting thrust right back into a starting unit role. I see him maybe coming in for like a 10 to 15 minute stretch off the bench for about like a 5-game stretch. See where he's at. If it's going well, that's about the time he'll come back in. Otherwise, shelve him and just, you know, ride out Whiteside.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, especially with the injury. And I liked your point of, you know, see how it goes after a 5-game stretch, because, you know, he's a big dude, and suffering that injury, we saw how long it took Gordon Hayward to come back, and he hasn't really even got back to that level. Paul George obviously hit it last year. Caris LeVert's injury was different. So it's going to be interesting with Nurkic. But who do you guys have as a starting lineup on opening night?
No questions asked, regardless of what NBA 2K has to say. Zach Collins will be starting in the power forward position and not Mario Hezonja. obviously, Dame, CJ, Rodney Hood, Zach Collins, and Hassan Whiteside. And I'm actually expecting Kent Bazemore to probably be our sixth man to start the season. Anfernee Simons shortly after that. I don't think they're going to immediately thrust Simons into that first man off the bench role. Obviously, a lot of that is also predicated on how much Zach Collins has worked on his not fouling part of the game. But definitely Zach Collins, and he's my player to watch per se, even more so than Simons, even with all the hype behind him, just because a lot is going to be predicated on his performance. Because if he starts off the season poorly, that means we're going to end up having to rely a lot more on a 39-year-old Pau Gasol or an unproven per se Scalabies here than we necessarily want to.
Yeah, or even like a role player like Anthony Tolliver playing extended minutes, which is beyond his sort of reach. I would have the same as Ryan, except I would have, and obviously Ryan knows way more than me, but just from a personal fit standpoint, I like Bazemore with the starting lineup as the small forward, just for because he possesses a little more defensive capabilities than Rodney Hood. And Rodney Hood just seems to be more of a spark plug off the bench guy. But for chemistry sort of reasons and consistency, I'm probably wrong. But I think just fit-wise and defense giving you a little bit more acumen on that end of the floor, I like Bazemore with the starting lineup.
Well, I thought I was going to be unique. I have Bazemore as my starting small forward and Zach Collins, a power forward, and Whiteside at center. And obviously, we both know the guards.
Yeah, I went with the same actually as Corey and Jack. I just see Rodney Hood as a six man, like Jack mentioned, but I wouldn't be surprised. Obviously, he was there, you know, last season, so we got some more experience with the team. But
I honestly think with Rodney Hood, sorry, Nick, that if he were to buy into a six man role, and obviously you'd much rather start him getting starters minutes, I think he could be a six man of the year contender with how good he was throughout that playoff run and how much offensive potential he does have and offensive talent he does have. I think he could put himself in that six-man of the year conversation.
I would even say that he was in that position, or at least growing into it with the Utah Jazz. Before he got traded to Cleveland, he was kind of growing into that six-man role, starting to find his offense. And obviously, he had his own issues when he went to Cleveland. It took him a while to get back on track. But I agree. I think he definitely has six-man candidate capabilities.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, and it's more about Rodney Hood, though. Is he going to be consistent through the year? Like, the opportunity might be there, but it's about him stepping his game up. Obviously, we saw what he did in Utah, but there was also a reason he was traded from Utah. So it's kind of about him bouncing back. But who's your player to watch?
Well, as stated, my player to watch, that's Zach Collins. He's even for me, like, if I were to fly down to Vegas right now, I'd probably put money on him for MIP for this year. The team has previously touted him as, you know, they badly touted him as in a future franchise cornerstone. I think that was a little too much pressure to put on him too early, but he's apparently, unlike any other player in the NBA, went into the gym and bulked up and put on really like 10 to 20 pounds of pure muscle. So he's obviously going to be a rock down low, but he's my player to watch because for all the reasons I mentioned before, it's kind of how he goes is going to be a good indicator of how the season is going to go, just in my mind, with their power forward crops. I can't necessarily say I would like to say Hood, but I think he already proved everything he needed to prove last year.
Yeah, for me, it's Anthony Simons. I think he's going to play a pretty important role as probably one of the backup point guards and floor generals. And obviously that final game of the season where he exploded for 37 points, 9 assists, 6 rebounds, and led them to that remarkable comeback win over the Nuggets. And obviously, before that, we didn't really see much of him because he didn't necessarily get the opportunity. The opportunity is there for him. And I think in a similar sort of vein, as Ryan was alluding to with Zach Collins, there is plenty of hype on this kid. He has insane amounts of talent, and it's going into his second year. Can he put it all together to be a really capable and productive part of this rotation? Because there is a lot riding on him. You know, the loss of Evan Turner, as much as Corey doesn't like him and a lot of other NBA heads don't like him, he was, you know, a consistent floor general and point guard-ish sort of player for this team. Anthony Simons now, the brunt of the weight has to go to him because there aren't many other guards that can sort of run the floor. Rodney Hood can do it maybe in spurts, as can Bazemore. But Anthony Simons, there's a lot riding on him. And I think he has all the talent to put it all together. He's going to be the teammates and the coaching staff seem to love him. So I'm looking for a big season from Anthony Simons.
So I went with Rodney Hood. You know, obviously Rodney Hood throughout the playoffs was the third best scoring option for this Blazers team, or at least in my eyes he was. Going into this upcoming year, whether he's starting, whether he's coming off the bench as a sixth man, his offense is going to be crucial. His ability to get to the rim, his ability to shoot threes, him being an above average defender, you know, a big part of the reason why they were able to get past OKC, get past Denver and make that deep playoff push was the fact that Rodney Hood became consistent. So for me, can he raise his game again to a higher level? Can he sustain the consistency in whatever role he's given?
Yeah, I went with Zach Collins here. I think last year he really started to show flashes. Like Ryan mentioned, the fouling is an issue. But I also really like the Simons pick, Jack. And no surprise, two of the three picks are young players on this team that can really take a jump. Where you look a lot of the veterans on this team, you kind of know what to expect other than Rodney Hood, who Corey mentioned. But these two are guys that they haven't hit their peaks yet, so it'll be interesting to see if the Blazers can get the most out of them. But talking predictions for the season, what's worst-case scenario for Portland?
So actually for me, and this will kind of tie back nicely into the mention of Anthony Simons, one of my worst-case scenarios is that there's too much pressure that's put on Anthony Simons. There's a lot of expectation on him to be able to produce, and Blazers have kind of cleared the way for him. And I think they've slightly positioned themselves nicely to be able to account for the fact if he's not able to produce. But with all this talk around him, I just, with Dame having said that, you know, when I'm long gone, this is going to be Anthony Simons' team. This is his year to kind of show the world what the players and the coaching staff and the GM have seen in practices. And I kind of worry that on a player as young as him, the hit that if he doesn't perform or live up to, you know, these expectations that have been put on him, that can kind of put a damper on a whole career. That can, you know, if a guy's not mentally strong enough, that can, you know, that could possibly be a career ender if he underperforms and can't handle the backlash.
Yeah, I think the worst case scenario for me is that Hassan Whiteside brings that sort of toxicity that he had in Miami, the desire to just be this guy rather than knowing what his role is within the team. Their lack of wing depth hurts them, and there's no growth from the guys we spoke about in Simmons and Collins, and they finish, you know, the lower rung of the playoffs with like a 7th or 8th seed. I think that they make it no matter what, barring any injuries. But that lower rungs of the playoffs, so then they're having to come up against a tough matchup like the Clippers or the Lakers or the Nuggets or Jazz or whatever one of those teams that they have to face.
Just so you don't get Anthony Simons hunting you down on Twitter real quick, it's Simons, not Simmons.
I thought so, yeah.
He's taken quite an offense to that, the local media market. He had two or three media day people accidentally call him Simmons, and not a fan.
Good to know. I think worst case scenario would be this team just doesn't have enough offensive pop alongside of Lillard and McCollum. Whiteside, as Jack mentioned, maybe he becomes sort of an issue in the locker room. This team finishes somewhere in the bottom of the Western Conference playoff seeding. I think they're a playoff team. And they end up getting, as Jack mentioned, a matchup with the Clippers or the Lakers early on or one of those bigger teams. And we see them out in the first round.
Yeah, pretty similar to you guys. I think, you know, they took a risk bringing a lot of new pieces in. Maybe those pieces don't work out. The young guys don't step up. They end up being an 8 seed, and it's mainly because Dame and CJ carried them there, and then they're gassed by the time the playoffs start. But what's best-case scenario?
Obviously, best-case scenario is that the Blazers get their get a banner at the start of the next season for the first time in quite a many years. But I think that's most teams' best case scenario. I'm going to say the realistic best case scenario is making it back to the Western Conference Finals. The West is absolutely loaded. It's absolutely stacked this year. But I actually think that kind of works a little bit in the Blazers' favor in that, especially if you look in division with the Jazz and the Nuggets expected to be up in the upper echelon of the league, that's a lot of divisional games that are kind of like up for grabs. I personally only expect to see one 50-win team in the West. So I'm putting the Blazers, if they can make a reappearance to the Western Conference Finals and you know, not get absolutely demolished immediately, that's their best case scenario.
Yeah, I'm on the same sort of bandwagon as Ryan. It's basically the same as last season, a quality regular season that leads to good matchups in the playoffs. And I think that they lucked out a lot thanks to Anthony Simons. And they get to a second straight Western Conference Finals appearance. And, you know, win a couple of games because, you know, they've struggled against the Warriors. And now that the Warriors aren't the Warriors anymore, maybe they could do that against the Lakers or the Clippers in a more comfortable sort of setting.
Yeah, I think best case scenario is them getting home court advantage in the first round. Obviously, the Western Conference seeding, I feel like it's going to go down to the wire like it has the last couple of years, where we're seeing teams up until the last game having their seats finally determined. So I see best case scenario being, obviously, an NBA title is everybody's best case, but them being a home court team and getting a favorable matchup.
Yeah, I kind of went with a combination of what Ryan and Jack said. Pretty much last season, but win a couple more games in the Western Conference Finals. I don't think this team has what it takes to get to the NBA Finals, but I think a Western Conference Finals appearance is possible if things break the right way like they did last year. But what would be your actual prediction for next season, and where do they finish in the division?
I have the Blazers pegged third in their division. I actually do think I'm gonna invert a lot of opinions, and I actually think that the Jazz are gonna end up winning the division. Nuggets will end up second, and Ooh. Then Blazers is third. I'm just not that high on the Nuggets. I think they're still a little too young of a team, and that Jokic, I've been to all the buffets in the land picture didn't fill me with confidence, but. I got them finishing third in the West and or third in the division and fourth in the West overall.
Yeah, I've got them finishing third in the Northwest as well. Probably 47, 48 wins, and I reckon a fifth or a sixth seed. That's just I think that they're, like we sort of spoke about when we were talking about the power rankings. There's not that low of a floor to this Blazers team. But the ceiling isn't necessarily exponentially high either, because we know what this team is. There aren't any sort of acquisitions or trades that they sort of made in the offseason that are going to make them, you know, infinitely better. Not like the Denver Nuggets could take a pop with a guy like Michael Porter Jr. on their squad. And the Utah Jazz, we saw the amount of acquisitions they made with Conley and Bogdanovich. Whereas the Blazers sort of remained sort of pat, despite with their sort of talented, you know, top-end core with their guards. And you know, unless you're expecting massive jumps out of Collins and Simons, then they're probably not going to take that huge of a jump. But at the same time, we've been surprised by the Blazers so consistently that I could easily be wrong.
So I predicted the Blazers to have 46 wins to finish third in their division. I had them somewhere between the sixth and eighth seed. And unfortunately, I had them being bounced in the first round.
Yeah, I'm pretty similar to Corey here. I got 47 wins, first round exit, you know, probably a mid-tier playoff team, probably anywhere from like 7 to 5. Like we've mentioned on the show, you know, the Western Conference playoffs aren't going to really be decided until that last week. But any other topics or thoughts you guys want to talk on the Blazers?
Let's see. Do you guys think that because we mentioned him numerous times, do you guys think, or how do you feel about my opinion that there are too high of expectations put on Anthony Simons?
Yeah, I probably, in your sort of similar vein, Ryan, I think that you're better off tempering expectations, than overplaying them to an extent. I say this to Nick quite consistently on the Blazers, on the Brooklyn Buzz. You know, you'd rather talk down and be pleasantly surprised than talk up and be pleasantly, you know, disappointed. So for me, in that fact, I think he has a lot of skill, a lot of talent, but there's such a glut for him, and there's such an emphasis, and it's going to be such a burden and responsibility for him at such a young age to really step in and really make an impact early. And we haven't seen it from a consistent standpoint from him yet. I think this preseason is going to illuminate a lot of sort of things and how he's sort of making that progress. I don't think it's going to be, you know, a consistently sort of easy ride for him to sort of being a quality rotation player. It's going to be bumpy because he is young, and there are going to be, you know, I think growth isn't linear in this league. We sort of saw it with Tatum and Mitchell last season. It's going to be up, it's going to be down, it's going to be a roller coaster. But I think for the most part, that I think he is going to produce, because the Portland Trailblazers system with the chemistry, with the leadership that you've sort of alluded to from top down, from O'Shea down to the players with Lillard and McCollum, I think they're going to get the most out of him. I think they're going to be able to provide him the guidance that he needs to become a quality rotation player in this league. And I think he's in the perfect sort of situation for it as well, despite the fact that I think a lot of young players would be thriving at the chance to really get in there and actually have a sort of impact, rather than sort of be, you know, sort of 12th, 13th guy on the roster playing spot up minutes like he did last season. I think he would prefer to sort of be in this sort of position where it's just like, all right, here you go, here's the opportunity, you need to take it with both hands. So I'm confident, but quietly confident.
Yeah, I feel like Corey, go ahead.
I was just going to say, obviously Summer League, he had a big performance. We've been hearing about him for the last year, it feels like, plus. I think any time somebody this young is coming into the league, or coming in and expecting to get some major minutes, that you have to, as Jack mentioned, temper your expectations of what to see. You know, so I think the expectation is definitely set high. The bar is set high. So if you're expecting him to be like a sixth man of the year or to win most improved, then you're probably going to be disappointed. But I think there's plenty of potential there for him.
I think anytime you have a young player like this, it's just a mindset. And I think they personally know him a little bit better than obviously we do. So they feel like maybe giving him that confidence and saying, hey, we expect big things from you. And also they have the luxury of seeing actually how much work he puts in. They know if he's at the training facility and if he really should be putting up these type of numbers because he put in work all summer. So I'm okay with it. I think obviously you put pressure on him, but if you're going to be a really good player, you need to deal with pressure. So I think it's kind of a slight risk, but I like it. I personally like, you know, infusing players with confidence.
I think one for Ryan before we jump onto league pass rating and such. Do you think Hassan Whiteside finishes the season on the Portland Trailblazers?
No. And a lot of that is predicated on the fact that I think from just how it seems that Nurkic has been handling his offseason rehab, the fact that the Blazers, you know, basically had a guy with him every day for 3 weeks at a time, gave him an off week, sent a new guy from the coaching staff out there to help with his rehabilitation and all that. I think he's going to come back actually stronger than most people expect him to. Post All-Star break, and because of that, I do not expect Whiteside to still be on the roster. The only reason he would be is if Nurk's rehab is hampered. Other than that, if Nurk comes back and he's playing great and he's right back into being the Bosnian beast, and Hassan Whiteside is still on the roster, that's a lot of, you know, cap space and trade asset ability. Yeah, I'm going to make that word up. Trade asset ability. That the Blazers are just letting play out the season and walk out the door. In this league, there's not really room on a roster for two top-notch centers to be playing on the same team.
Right.
All right, moving on to league pass. Where would you guys rate the Blazers 1 through 10?
So are we going 1 being you got to watch them every night and 10 being never turn them on?
Opposite. 10 you opposite. Watch them every night. Yeah. 1 being they're trash, 10 being they're amazing.
I'm going to park them somewhere around like a 6.5 or 7. Mostly because they have a lot of dud nights. It pains me to say it. they've had a lot of nights where it's, you know, they're playing, you know, the Suns, and we're going, why is this only a 3-point game? They're exciting. There's a lot of intrigue with all the new players, but that's kind of like a, you get a new car kind of thing. And as soon as you, you know, drive the car around the block a couple times, you've taken it to work a few times, you know, the newness luster washes away. And so they're going to lose out in the watchability rankings to, you know, the higher profile teams like the Clippers and the Lakers.
Yeah, I'm going to go 7 out of 10 for essentially all the reasons that Ryan sort of made. Dame is must-watch TV whenever he is on, and whenever he is literally on, when he's balling, there aren't many better players to watch, and I think we saw that in last year's postseason. So for me, it's a solid 7.
I went with a 5.5.
Oh my gosh, you are so low on
10. I'm not always... All right, Nick was just critiquing me. I've been too high recently.
Interesting.
Can usual. You get back there? I'm new here. So can you get back there? I need the highness.
I mean,
I'm coming out of blood with you again.
I can only watch so many games in a night. That's my watchability ranking that plays a factor in this. So 5.5. I mean, Lillard's must watch. I don't disagree with that. McCollum and him are extremely fun to watch. I'm not a big Whiteside guy. I mean, I can do without a lot of Whiteside in my life. But if they're working, then that helps it a little bit. I'm interested in Rodney Hood. I do have some intrigue in Simons.
Yeah.
There we go.
Okay, didn't do that wrong. Collins. So, I mean, I think there's some watchability there. More so, depending on who they're playing, will affect my watchability.
Yeah, no, I think I'm about a 6.5, and like you mentioned, Corey, I think it's more about like who they're playing. We've already seen a lot of Dame and CJ for the last couple seasons. It's more about some of the young guys popping off, but it seems like they do get some really good, you know, primetime matchups. It seems like Dame always kind of steps his game up when he matches up with Steph Curry, so there'll be a couple games to circle for sure. But what would be your TV show comparison for the Blazers now, Ryan? This can be based off of watchability or based off of a show's plot.
All right, so I'm going a little more generic than that, but I'm actually going to equate him to The Simpsons, and that's just because for most of The Simpsons run as of late, people are like, nah, they're done, they won't succeed, yet they still overperform in the ratings, more so than people expect them to, and I think that's probably the best analogy that I can make for the Blazers. If you go back over the last five or so years, they have constantly exceeded expectations, outperformed what they were expected to do. And, you know, The Simpsons, we've all thought that, yeah, this got to be their last season for, I don't know, like since I was 12 and I'm 30 something. So, you know, that's where I'm going with that.
I think, what are they on, season 31?
Yeah, 31. 1989 is when it started, so I think it'd be 31.
Holy crap, I'm older than The Simpsons.
I'm just younger than The Simpsons, thankfully. Yeah, I'm going to go with a similar sort of tack and route that Ryan did and go with It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia because it's a consistently great and entertaining show, and it's up to season 14 now, and a lot of people don't really give it the credence that it deserves. You know, it's really, it's probably one of my top two, top three shows, but it doesn't get the credit that it deserves, but it consistently is funny. It has an awesome cast, and it's one of the best shows on TV for me. And I think the Blazers are similar in terms of how they produce season and season, season after season after season.
So we all with similar basis for these shows. I went with That 70s Show. Consistently funny, consistently entertaining. You know that you can guarantee yourself for, in the Blazers case, you know, Lillard and McCollum showing off. And if you're watching That 70s Show, you know you're good for a laugh or two. So that's my show.
With That 70s Show, I only figured out today, I think I saw it on Twitter, that Fez isn't actually his name. You know what it is?
It Fernando?
Means foreign, no, it means foreign exchange student. I had no idea about that. I'm like, you know those little mini woke moments that you have? That was a mini woke moment for me.
That was literally in the pilot episode of that show, and they just decided to call him Fez because they could not pronounce his actual name.
I can't remember.
I thought it was just a short for something.
No, no, it was foreign exchange student. If you actually go and look it up on IMDb, the Z is an S.
Oh, wow. All right. Learn something new. I love it.
Pop culture history. And with that, I definitely dropped the ball today. I just went with something based off of watchability, and that's Workaholics. But guys, a pleasure talking Blazers with talking Blazers with you guys. Ryan, great having you on for the first time. Corey and Jack, always a pleasure. Everyone give themselves a shout out.
At the JMNJBT on Twitter.
So you can find me, Ryan, at the Witty Ryan, or catch my Blazer Tag podcast at Blazer Tag Podcast.
Now you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at KWAL Hoops, KWAL Hoops.
And obviously follow OTG at OTG Basketball and head to the website for some great NBA content at OTG Basketball. And obviously find the show iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.
Peace out, knuckleheads.
Ah, you got to quit.
Later.